is Monday, February the 8th. This is VOA's International Edition. Very good to have you with us today. Coming up, another long-range missile test for North Korea.
It was about time, and it makes sense for them to follow the recent nuclear test up with another long-range missile test because the two go hand in hand.
Also ahead, ongoing violence in Burundi, the race for the White House, plus the latest from the world of sports and music. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. North Korea's latest rocket launch is raising concerns here in the United States and with its allies that Pyongyang is moving forward with its ballistic missile program. On Sunday, North Korea fired a long-range rocket from its West Coast launch site in Chongqing-ri. North Korea's state television said the launch ordered by the country's leader Kim Jong-un was a complete success and that Pyongyang will continue to conduct the launches. Pyongyang insists the launch is a peaceful space mission, but its apparent non-compliance with international obligations is raising questions about the purpose of the mission. For some analysis of that North Korean launch, VOA's Victor Beatty speaks with Tufts University Korea scholar Sung-Yoon Lee. Dr. Lee says the Sunday launch was a long time in coming.
It was about time for North Korea to do another long-range missile test because their last came slightly more than 3 years ago, and they have obviously a technical as well as a political need to keep on testing those big machines, big rockets. So it's not surprising, and with their keen sense of timing, it was entirely predictable that they would do it on a Sunday morning when the weather was fine, right at the start of the most important national holiday celebrations in China and in South Korea, the Lunar New Year celebrations. 3 years ago, North Korea really rubbed it in to the new Xi Jinping regime in Beijing by conducting a nuclear test on February 12, 2013. At the time, it was the Lunar New Year celebrations for the new Chinese regime. So it was about time, and it makes sense for them to follow the recent nuclear test up with another long-range missile test because the two go hand in hand, of course. North Korea's strategy for many years has been to one day demonstrate that it can marry a nuclear warhead with a long-range missile that can hit the continental U.S. And by some accounts, the latest test showed that North Korea now has the capability to hit not only the west coast of the U.S. with an intercontinental ballistic missile, but much of the U.S., including Washington, and that it's really beyond time for Washington and Seoul, for the U.S. and South Korea to take the North Korea problem and its growing lethality seriously. Over the past 25 years, I would say neither has taken the growing North Korean threat seriously.
Well, both countries now are exploring whether to deploy an advanced missile defense system in South Korea at, quote, the earliest possible date.
Well, that will not change anything. It's something that South Korea should have done 3 years ago instead of hedging and instead of looking at Beijing and see how much they would frown if South Korea did that. South Korea's somewhat juvenile rationale for hedging and for delaying the adoption of this high-altitude missile defense system was that, well, it would irritate the Chinese, and South Korea needs China to rein in North Korea. But history shows, a quarter century of history shows, that whenever North Korea resorts to a provocation like this, China has acted consistently, utter some rhetorical condemnation, issue a condemnation, occasionally sign on to UN Security Council resolutions purportedly penalizing North Korea, and then behind the scenes keep on giving to North Korea.
Well, here's how Reuters puts it. China, South Korea's biggest trading partner, repeated what it says is its deep concern about a system whose radar can penetrate its own territory. Will this be enough to push China toward tougher action?
Not at all, no, not in the least, because China is playing a different game, and really from an amoral approach to international studies, international relations, what China is doing kind of makes sense. China enjoys great leverage, great economic political influence over both Koreas, over North and South Korea, and China is just fine with a tiny North Korea that depends on China for survival, for food and fuel, armed with a few nuclear weapons with which it threatens the U.S. and South Korea. China is just fine with that. So China is playing an entirely different game. And for the United States, as we saw, Secretary of State Kerry in China last week publicly complained that China is not doing enough, coming across as slightly whiny, is really not helpful. The U.S. should stop outsourcing its North Korea policy to China and take charge of the situation, because it has the wherewithal, it has vast financial authorities, power to do it, to put pressure not only on North Korea, but also North Korea's primary enabler, China, by blocking both North Korean entities and Chinese enablers of North Korea's weapons of mass destruction, proliferation, and cyber crimes, and human trafficking, and censorship, and human rights violations. Any Chinese organization that continues to engage in financial transactions with designated North Korean entities should be blocked out of the U.S. financial system. And that is the main, the really essential point of the tough North Korea Sanctions Enforcement Act that is pending in the Senate right now. And I think the Senate will probably vote on it sometime this week, as early as Wednesday.
Soon-Yung Lee is the Kim Koo Korea Foundation Professor in Korean Studies and Assistant Professor at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. Well, as we've just noted, North Korea's rocket launch adds to Washington's concerns about Pyongyang's nuclear program and its military ambitions. VOA's Michael Bowman reports that congressional passage of tougher sanctions on North Korea could be expedited, as we've just heard, this week on Capitol Hill.
While Pyongyang boasts of its technological achievement, U.S. National Security Advisor Susan Rice condemned the rocket launch and pledged the United States, quote, will take steps to defend ourselves and our allies and respond to North Korean provocations. Even before the launch, the White House was on alert.
You know, we have been in conversations with China about how they, in coordination with the international community, can apply more pressure to the North Koreans to get them to comply with international obligations.
What you've got is the unintended consequences of doing nothing.
The chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee says the full chamber will take up a bill to, quote, expand and tighten enforcement of sanctions for North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile development that targets a wide range of the regime's illicit activities.
They continue to do the ballistic missile testing. They continue to work on those elements that will put them in a place to be able to deliver a nuclear warhead. The country that could really push back against what North Korea is doing is China. As you know, they're always focused on stability and don't want to rock the boat. But I think these sanctions may change that.
One of the first things we should do is expand our missile defense capacity. We ought to put missile defense interceptors in South Korea. South Korea wants them.
The rocket launch quickly became a topic in America's presidential contest.
The next president of the United States is going to have to get the United States back in the game. And if a preemptive strike is necessary to keep us safe, then we should do it.
China says they don't have that good a control over North Korea. They have tremendous control. I would get on with China. Let China solve that problem.
Democratic presidential contender Hillary Clinton has accused Pyongyang of nuclear blackmail and bullying, saying, quote, we need a commander-in-chief with the experience and judgment to deal with a dangerous North Korea on day one. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
And continuing with the rocket launch, let's check out what's being said online about it all. For that, we turn to International Edition's G. Abby Lee. Hi, G.
Hi, Steve. Many South Koreans are demanding more than just words from their own government and the international community. Yonhap News Agency has been reporting throughout the weekend about the rocket launch, and one of the reports is about the UN Security Council unanimously condemning Pyongyang for defying sanctions and launching a rocket. And these are some of the top comments. Please take a proper measure, not just with words, but with action. The second most liked comment was basically an echo of the top comment, and the third comment was a rhetorical question asking, what is the point of these condemnations alone? So it's almost an understatement to say that people are frustrated with what they see as a non-action by the international community.
You know, that's especially ironic because the current UN Secretary General is a former South Korean diplomat.
Exactly. The South Korean public is also urging its own leadership to show a stronger stance against the North. Joseon Ilbo is one of the most conservative newspapers in the country and wrote about President Park Geun-hye criticizing the rocket launch as an unacceptable provocation. The most liked comment to that article is, "We have heard the word unacceptable numerous times. Please show what you mean with action." Nearly 3,000 people liked it and around 100 people disliked it.
I see now. So that's the overriding sentiment in the South. But what about some other perspectives on the issue?
Well, the Chinese government's role in dealing with the North is a lot more important than most people realize, so let's talk about that a little bit. Yonhap reported Beijing summoned North Korean ambassador to China, Ji Jae-ryong, to its foreign ministry Saturday. The most liked comment to that article reflects the South Korean public's discontent with Beijing. The comment reads like this. "We don't care what you, referring to Beijing, do. You lost our trust. The government should hurry up with the THAAD missile defense system and strengthen our alliance with Washington." Now, what's really interesting is that THAAD, which stands for the U.S.-made Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System, became more or less a household vocabulary in the South. For the longest time, Seoul had a lukewarm attitude to deploying the system because of Beijing's strong dissent, but over the weekend, Seoul embraced the idea. Steve?
And many thanks to you, G. That is our own social media guru, G. Abby Lee. By the way, you can follow G on Twitter, at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman, and you can follow International Edition on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
This is VOA's International Edition. Four people, including a child, were killed in Burundi late Saturday when three grenades detonated in a bar in the capital Bujumbura. At least 10 others were wounded. Burundi has been in crisis since last April when Pierre Nkurunziza, the president, announced his intention to seek a third term in office. That sparked months of street protest and intermittent killings, a refugee exodus, and an attempted coup. AU, the African Union, trying to convince the government to accept a 5,000-strong peacekeeping force. Somali security officials say the explosion last Tuesday aboard a jetliner that had to make an emergency landing in Mogadishu was caused by a bomb. Security video footage at the airport shows two men, one apparently an airport employee, handing what appears to be a laptop computer to the suspected suicide bomber. The man, identified as Abdullahi Abdul Salam, was killed when he was sucked out of 1-meter-wide hole in the fuselage of the Dalo Airlines Airbus A321. It was en route to Djibouti. 74 people were on board, and that all happened as it climbed after takeoff when the blast occurred. Two other people were injured before the pilot was able to land safely. Several suspected have been arrested there. The militant group Al-Shabaab is believed to have been behind the attack, but there has been no claim of responsibility. Somali President Hassan Sheikh Sunday warned government officials against bailing out or helping the release terrorism suspects after government jails. He also defended the security at the airport, although the pilot of the plane is quoted as saying, "Security is zero." Egyptian police killed four people as they raided a house south of Cairo where terrorists are believed plotting attacks against security forces and making explosives. Interior Ministry said the four were implicated in the killing of a soldier and two policemen and the link to the group Adnan Misr, or Soldiers of Egypt. Algerian Parliament on Sunday overwhelmingly approved a package of constitutional reforms. They include a president, limited terms, the approval of a parliament and the naming of a prime minister, creation of an independent electoral commission, and officially recognizing the language of the country, the indigenous Berber minority. The reforms are the result of the 2011 Arab Spring uprisings and allow 78-year-old incumbent President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, now in his fourth term, to run for a fifth term in 2019. Opposition says the reforms do not lessen the influence of the ruling FLN party and the military. And an airstrike early on Sunday struck the Libyan city of Derna, hitting a medical facility in a populated area, killing at least four. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but unidentified warplanes have struck Islamist positions in Libya in the past. Derna has an Islamic State presence. And we turn now to U.S. politics. The next stop on the way to the White House is one for the Republican or Democratic presidential contenders by Tuesday's primary in the state of New Hampshire. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone is part of the VOA reporting team in New Hampshire and earlier spoke with my colleague Jim Stevenson about the weekend Republican debate and what the voters in New Hampshire are thinking.
The Republicans had quite a feisty debate, and you can tell that the pressure of performing in the upcoming New Hampshire primary is really on their minds. I'd say the number one target in the Republican debate turned out to be Florida Senator Marco Rubio. He went through a difficult period in the debate where he was challenged by New Jersey Governor Chris Christie about his, what Christie believes, his lack of experience, and Rubio kept repeating the same mantra over and over again about challenging the sort of view that President Obama has about how to run the country. And I have to say that this sort of became the headline out of the debate. Not great timing for Rubio. He had been surging a bit in some of the polls here in New Hampshire. He had a good finish in Iowa. So whether or not this stalls his momentum in the final days, we'll have to see.
The Democrats certainly are having a war of words themselves. We're down to essentially two candidates, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders trying to make the point that Hillary is not a progressive candidate.
Yeah, this has really become the focal point of the debate. And, you know, one of the reasons for that, Jim, is that in both parties, the sort of fringes on either side get really involved in the primary and caucus vote. So in the Democratic Party, it's the sort of liberal left, the progressives, who are flocking to Bernie Sanders, especially young people. And some of my VOA colleagues have noted that again up here in New Hampshire, as we saw in Iowa. So Sanders seems to have a hold on them. Hillary Clinton is trying to regain some ground here. She trails in New Hampshire by a fair bit. They're hoping they can narrow the gap between now and Tuesday, primary day. But Clinton also has a longer strategy, and even though we expect this debate between the two of them to go on as to who is more progressive, Clinton can look to states like Nevada with its large Hispanic population and South Carolina later in the month with its sizable African-American community. Clinton believes, their campaign believes, they have a firewall with minority voters, and so far, from what we can tell, that's been a challenge for Bernie Sanders to break beyond sort of white progressives and draw in some minority voters.
Well, weather is never an obstacle for people in New Hampshire because they're just used to it. We saw quite a bit of energy in Iowa. Do you feel that energy in New Hampshire among voters?
You know, I do, and it's a different type. I got to tell you, I've been talking to many voters. Here's the thing. They're like shoppers. You go to a rally and you'll ask them, and they'll say, well, this is the fourth, fifth, or sixth time they've seen some of the different candidates. And, of course, you then ask them, so have you decided? No, I haven't. I'm going to wait till the last minute. This is what makes New Hampshire really interesting. They're more independent types of voters, even if they're Republicans. They're a little bit more moderate than, say, in Iowa. And they tend to wait till the last minute. They tend to really scrutinize their choices. And you know what? be careful of the polls, because at the very end they can surprise you. And I think on the Republican side, we've got a huge scramble right now. Trump seems to be leading, but you've got about four candidates who would love to come in second. And once we clear New Hampshire, how many Republican candidates will stay in the race?
That is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. He was speaking with International Edition's Jim Stevenson. You can check out our website, voanews.com, where you'll find the 2016 USA Votes widget. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A new study published in the Nature journal Scientific Reports finds that the behavior of some marine invertebrates who make their home on the seafloor can be affected by the sounds related to human activity. Researchers at England's University of Southampton found that these animals, who play an important role in maintaining marine ecosystems, become less active when exposed to man-made sounds such as those produced by ship traffic or offshore construction activity. Creatures such as langoustines, manila clams, and brittle stars live in burrows they dig in the sediment of the ocean's floor. Creating the burrows and movement into and out of their homes stirs up the seafloor, which is considered vital in recycling nutrients and storing carbon. The researchers say any reduction in the animals' disturbance of the sediment could lead to conditions which could have a negative impact on the area's ecosystem. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And this is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Well, look at this. The U.S. National Football League's annual championship game, known as the Super Bowl, was played Sunday night in the state of California. Many people going into that game thought it would be won by the Carolina Panthers, if nothing else, because they had almost a perfect season score. But it turned out that the Denver Broncos hit the ground running and never let up. Final score was Denver 24, Carolina 10. Now to the world of music, where singer-songwriter Dan Hicks, known for his blend of folk, jazz, and country music, died over the weekend in Mill Valley, California, had a 2-year battle with cancer. He was 74. Hicks was known as the leader of the acoustic band Dan Hicks and his Hot Licks, which was a contemporary band of the Grateful Dead and Jefferson Airplane in the late 1960s San Francisco psychedelic scene. He never achieved as much mainstream success as others from that era, but he was highly regarded by fellow musicians. At his commercial peak, Dan Hicks recorded several successful albums for Blue Thumb Records, including Where's the Money, Striking It Rich, and Last Train to Hicksville. One of their big hits through that period was Shorty Falls in Love, featuring the Lickettes. That's right, the Lickettes, Marianne Price and Naomi Eisenberg, plus the rest of the Hot Licks, Sid Page on violin, Jaime Leopold on bass, John Gerton on guitar, and Dan Hicks vocals and guitar.
Take a memory. what's new now? We have ourselves a silver time. As we sped around the world to see what we could see. But I saw you and you saw me mostly.
Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks disbanded in 1973, and Hicks went on to work in a range of arenas, performing on movie soundtracks and with other ensembles, including the Acoustic Warriors. But he later said life was best when he and the Hot Licks were making music like Milk Shakin' Mama.
Well, I went down on the street, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. And I was real hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw a malt shop.
Yeah. Yeah,
yes, I did. And I was, I don't know, that love.
Love?
Yes, love was waiting for me. As I sat down at the counter with a menu in my hand, I saw what was behind it. I hit a grand slam. I saw my soda fountain, baby.
Soda fountain, baby.
Soda fountain, baby.
He was a hoot, wasn't he? We're going to hear some more of Dan Hicks here and his Hot Licks, but I have to say goodbye to everyone. Hey, listen, thanks for joining us today on International Edition on The Voice of America. Reminder, top world news straight ahead. Hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Chaz Hall, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great Monday. Now, here you go, Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks.
By the time she brought my Sunday, I could not eat a bite. I let it drip all over and stirred with all my might. My milkshake mama,
my milkshake mama,
my milkshake mama,
my milkshake mama.
I saw the girl who keeps the ice cream, and now it's ice cream for her. As I paid my check, I wondered, heck, would you ever call me dear? I saw the girl who keeps the ice cream, and now it's ice cream for her.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria James Entwistle was present at the Memorandum of Understanding signing ceremony in Kaduna, Nigeria in late January for routine immunization in Borno, Kaduna, Sokoto, and Bauchi states. I am proud that the U.S. government is joining the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Dangote Foundation in the strong pursuit to end vaccine-preventable child deaths in Nigeria, said Ambassador Entwistle. Under this partnership, we are helping Sokoto State to increase and sustain high immunization coverage. This occasion demonstrates the willingness and commitment of your governments and organizations to tackle the challenges to achieving these goals. The United States provides significant resources, more than $500 million annually, for programs to address serious health issues, such as child mortality, maternal and newborn health, HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis. These MOUs offer the model platform to capitalize on the prospects of evidence-based approaches, said Ambassador Entwistle. Results will include stronger systems for immunizations, equal access to routine immunization services, and building capacity for Nigerian states like Sokoto to lead in developing solutions for its people. Perhaps even more importantly, these agreements serve as a model on which to base future partnerships between development partners and the government of Nigeria. Ensuring transparency and accountability in the implementation of this program demonstrates the pledge of the governments of all the states involved to ensuring they meet their responsibilities to their constituents. Essential health services, like routine immunization programs, can only be provided when all partners are coordinated and committed in this manner. Immunization represents one of the most cost-effective public health interventions. Routine immunization services, when sustained, reduce maternal and child illnesses and deaths and free up other resources for economic development. Under this partnership, the U.S. government will maintain its focus on Sokoto State, offering quality technical assistance in support of the partners' harmonized work plan in that state. Our ultimate goal, said Ambassador Entwistle, is to end preventable child and maternal deaths and to achieve an AIDS-free generation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.